ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brown. Welcome to the Country Hour on a Friday lunchtime and happy horse's birthday to you. The 1st of August is also the start of the tiger prawn season in Northern Australia. How is the season shaping up for fishos?
We always go out with high expectations. That's where we go. As always, we're gamblers. It's what we do.
I'll be chatting to Bushfires NT very soon about fire conditions in the Barkly. Now, if you've got a question that you want to put to Bushfires NT, send it through on that text line 0487 99 1057. Also this afternoon, let's talk about cow prices because they have absolutely bolted this week. Why have they bolted? Can they go even higher? We'll talk about that soon. Also this afternoon, I've got some news to share with you about one of Australia's best known Wagyu beef companies going up for sale. A busy program this afternoon. Let's get amongst it. We're broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC. G'day, if you've tuned in via the podcast. It is picnic day on Monday in the Northern Territory, which means the famous Hearts Range races are on this weekend. The races have been running there since 1947 out in the East MacDonald Ranges. So this racetrack's about 200 k's to the east of Alice Springs, an absolutely beautiful location. An iconic event, and there's camp drafting action there this afternoon. Our reporter Charles Geary has made it to Hearts Range. How's it all looking out there this afternoon, Charles?
G'day, Matt. Beautiful is the word to describe it. We're out here at Hearts Range, and it is absolutely stunning. There's a bit of a nip in the air, but that hasn't stopped competitors to come out here and enjoy the camp draft. I'm seeing a line of probably about 10 horses in front of me, with competitors eager to go with the novice final upcoming right now.
Rightio. And at this early stage, are they expecting a good crowd this weekend?
We're already seeing some very good numbers now, obviously with the Hearts Range weekend coming up as well. After this Red Centre camp draft, numbers are expected to flow in here from Tennant Creek and Alice Springs, but we're seeing a really good crowd here amongst everyone here now.
Now, Hearts Range, out there near Mount Riddick, I think you've got the man himself there with you this afternoon, don't you, Steve?
I do. I've got Steve Cadzo here, who's actually just gotten off the back of the horse himself. He's also been drafting some of the cattle for other competitors. Steve, talk to us about your ride today.
Today wasn't a good day for me. I bombed out in the two runs I had, but yesterday wasn't too bad. And all in all, everybody's got around. We've had some fantastic round rates. It's pretty much only pilot error that gets you into trouble. The cattle have been really good.
Bit of an unfortunate run yourself. Are you glad to be off the horse now and out helping out and bringing those cattle in for other competitors?
Well, unfortunately for me, I've got the added burden of running the show, and your mind's not really on it, and yet any course you get's actually an added bonus. But it just hasn't been too bad at all, really.
It's been going on since Tuesday, the Red Centre camp draft. How has the festivities and the competition been?
Our competition's been fierce with the competitors we've got here, and not too many people playing up. It's been a pretty laid back affair. We've been drafting office hours, you might say, 8 till 5. Well, depends where you work, I suppose. But yeah, it's been pretty good, and the competitors have loved it. Yeah.
And our competitors, health or horses, how have they been? Seen some really strong competition from them as well?
Oh, yes. There's some really good horsepower here. There's a lot of money tied up here, and it really goes to show.
We've obviously got the Hearts Rangers Sports Weekend, rodeo, races this weekend. There's a lot on offer. Are you excited for that as well?
20 years ago, I probably would have been. I was sort of out of that part of it, you might say. But yeah, we all have a good time here, and everybody pitches in and helps and does everything else. Yeah.
You said earlier, still got work duties on. Does that work duties extend over to the Hearts Range weekend as well?
Yeah, where it needs to be, yeah. I've been here since 87. We just been part of our life as well, and being right in the middle of the place, you've got to pitch in and help where you can.
Steve, mate, I know you're very busy. You've got more cattle to draft. Thank you for joining us on the Country Hour today. Back over to you, Matt.
Well, thanks for that, Charles. I think Steve's been a bit modest here. I'm just looking at through some of the early results from the Red Centre Camp Draft. I've got here the men's draft, won by Steve Cadzo on Plain Cut and Mouse. I've got the Battle of the Sexes, won by Steve Cadzo. I've got Imogen Cadzo taking out the juvenile draft. 21. Hey, I think the Cadzos have done okay there at Hearts Range.
Family affair. Steve has just told me porkies by the sound.
He might have failed at the one just a moment ago, but I think overall they're taking home a few trophies and prize money. How's the season out there looking? You've driven there today. How's it all looking?
Certainly a lot of green coming through, a lot of those wildflowers coming through as well. It's just absolutely stunning. This has been my first trip out here to Hearts Range, and the country you can see has really still holding up from those rains they got in May. It's really looking really nice out here.
And it is the horse's birthday today, August 1. You're surrounded by horses out there this afternoon. Anything special going on? Any birthday cakes? Special carrots?
It might be horse's birthday, but you wouldn't be able to tell. I've never seen a set of more serious animals in my life. They've got a job ahead of them here at the camp draft, and they're all clearly very locked in and they're ready to compete today.
I like it. You get out there and enjoy yourself as well, Charles. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll chat to you on Monday.
Thanks, Matt.
That's Charles Geary out there at the Hearts Range Racecourse this afternoon. If you're anywhere near Hearts Range over the next few days, make sure you head along. Not only a beautiful location, but that is an iconic event. It's 23-1. We'll talk about the kick in cow prices in just a moment, but it is the horse's birthday. What sort of song should we play this afternoon on the Country Hour to mark this special occasion? Here's a few suggestions.
Whiskey for my men, beer for my horses. I'm being pulled apart by horses. 'Cause I saddle up my horse and I'm riding to the city.
What's the horse song you'd love to hear this afternoon? Send it through on the text line 0487 99 1057. I'd imagine we've got time for one, maybe two horsey tunes this afternoon on ABC Radio.
Save a horse, ride a cowboy. Well,
now, as the world waited this week to see what Donald Trump's next move would be on tariffs, the value of cows in Australian sale yards absolutely bolted. So, for example, at Roma on Tuesday, heavy cows there reached $4.40 a kilo, which is incredible money, according to the local agent there, Jeffrey Maslin.
In my 21 years of being here in Roma, I can't ever remember seeing cows make $4.40. And now these are genuine, heavy cows, right? $4.40. Even coming back on a slippery cow, 550 kilos, they were $90 to $4. But your big, heavy cows, easily $4.10 to $4.40. So we really did see that cow market match all the southern markets. It was just fantastic to see and quite exciting list.
Yeah, so the National Processor Cow Indicator, it's jumped nearly 50 cents a kilo just this week, and it's now getting very close to its all-time high. Meanwhile, the Dairy Cow Indicator, it's already reached a new record this week of 354 cents a kilo at a Chuka. A couple of days back, there were some heavy dairy cows that sold for almost $3,000 each. Get your heads around that. Old dairy cows selling for nearly $3,000 a pop. I had a chat a moment ago to Ripley Atkinson from StoneX for his thoughts on what has made the cow price kick.
So we look at the cow job in the past week. It's actually had its strongest six-week rally on record. And what's fundamentally driving that market at the minute is particularly the southern processors and exporters looking to source stock, slaughter stock that they need to maintain their kill chains and operate their processing facilities. And obviously the recent continued rain in southern Australia on the edge of spring has supported a tightening in physical cattle supply. It's forced those southern processors to compete harder amongst themselves in northern markets, and that added competition is driving that market to where we're seeing it perform at the minute.
If a processor buys a dairy cow for about $3,000, can they make a profit on that?
It's an interesting consideration because we've got to remember, you know, the cost of doing business for these processors and exporters has risen exponentially in the past 5 years. And when you add in that aspect, the supportive nature of that at the minute is the demand and the sell price into, say, the US market for that really lean grinding or manufacturing meat. It's a very happy marriage is what I would say, is because Australia has that supply of dairy product, and the US traditionally, you know, produces that fattier trim from their grain-fed system, those dairy cows with 90 and 95 CL or chemically lean product is a perfect match. And its ability for Australia to export that into the US to blend with the fattier grain-fed trim for your hamburger or your mince is a really happy relationship.
So what are you expecting the cow price to do for the rest of this year?
What we've got to start with for the cow price and the market in general is the Victorian and southern processors in general went through a pretty challenging time during COVID. You know, the capacity to operate was severely hindered by lockdown restrictions. And when you think about that, they're going to want to try and maintain their workforce primarily, you know, as best they can through this period of tight supply. The added aspect to that is we're now 6 to 8 weeks away from a potential southern spring. And obviously that's going to transpire to a rebuild if the weather continues to be favourable for those southern producers. The rainfall is there. Soil moisture profiles are starting to recover. And what we will see happen, similar to what we did in 21-22, was a lot of those older cows were actually either bought by producers or kept on farm to be joined and obviously have a calf to rebuild numbers. If that transpires, cow supply is going to remain very short in southern Australia, which in turn will force those southern processors and exporters to remain in the northern markets a fair bit longer than you traditionally expect or seasonally expect. And as a result, with the outlook due to lower supply of grinding meat from the US itself, the outlook for cow markets and cow prices is very strong. I think when we look back on 2025 and the year that was, I think the cow market will be the highlight of this year. And we're already seeing highlights, you know, as of this week and how it's performed over the last 6 weeks.
That's Ripley Atkinson, who's the Australian Livestock and Commodities Manager for StoneX. Now, Donald Trump, he is in the news this afternoon after unveiling a range of new tariffs. It does look like Australia has been spared, and so our red meat exports will remain at that baseline tariff of 10%, so business as usual. However, it would seem the United States is going to enforce a huge tariff on Brazilian meat going into America. President Donald Trump has signed two separate orders today confirming Brazil's 10% tariff rate and then another applying a 40% tariff on multiple products, including beef. Episode 3's Matt Dalgleish says this could be a massive win for Aussie farmers.
So as it stands now, we've got a 10% tariff, a broad-based one, against Brazil, which would include their beef. We have also, if you recall, the Brazilians, they've reached their tariff quota, so they have another additional kind of tariff placed on because they're above quota now. So that's another 26.4% on top of the 10. So they're sitting currently at 36.4, but now the administration has also announced a 40% tariff to go on Brazil on top of all that, which is due to come into effect, I think, August the 7th.
That's the hard bit to try and work out, isn't there? Because there's been two announcements from Donald Trump today, one listing Brazil as 10% tariff, but another executive order saying there's a 40% tariff due to threats to the United States.
Correct. Yeah. So there's the broad-based one that he's negotiating through all the countries with. If you remember that big, what was it? His whiteboard type thing.
Liberation Day.
Yeah. It looked like his school assignment that he was presenting to the class. Show and tell board. That one is the broad-based stuff. So that's still, some of those were under negotiation, and he's come out today with what the existing levels are for the different countries. So they're various as well. I noted New Zealand went up to 15%. Australia wasn't on that list, so we assume we're still at 10% presently. But there's also a secondary White House announcement that specifies an additional 40% will be put in place in early August.
Over 75% tariffs on Brazilian beef going to the United States. What does that do to the meat market?
Look, it certainly, from the Brazilian perspective, it makes it the US not really a destination for the rest of this season. Up until recently, that if you compare this year's flows to last year's, they are over 100% higher this year. So, and they obviously they've reached that quota tariff, so that would have made some difficulty in price to continue. But at a 36.4% versus a 76.4%, it's a significant higher level. So I don't think we're going to see too much Brazilian beef making their way into the US for the rest of this year. And that provides some opportunities for Australia, because we're still sitting at 10%. And so even if you look at Brazilian cattle prices, which are currently below ours in terms of heavy steer, they're below ours by about 20%. It's going to make them very uncompetitive, and to the degree that they're not really going to be able to send any product to the US for the rest of this year. So good opportunities for Australia to keep supplying.
Brazil is the world's biggest beef exporter. If it's not sending that meat to the United States, it's got to go somewhere, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So they will have to look at alternatives, and China would be an obvious one. Brazil is the largest exporter into China currently in terms of market share into China for beef. And you're right, they are the biggest exporter globally. They account, last year I think they accounted for about 27% of the volumes, and Australia was second highest. At about 14% from memory. So yeah, they're significantly higher, and they're a huge player when it comes to the global space. So fortunately for Australia, in a lot of markets, we don't tend to compete directly. Obviously in the US, that grinding beef one we do a bit, and they've got access back just in the last few years since they regained access after the US were more satisfied with their biosecurity issues that they've been having of recent. So the US had been seeing a growing share of Brazilian beef coming in over the last few years. So that's going to go away. But, yeah, they're still getting access into China. So that's another area where they'll probably focus their attention, I think.
So Australia might have more competition from Brazilian meat into the China market. But you're right, their biggest competitor into the US is effectively locked out of that market. So is that encouraging for the Australian producer to think we might get better prices despite a 10% tariff on our own meat exports to the United States? There might be bigger demand.
Yeah, correct. It puts us in a better position. And when you think about that lean product that goes in, whether it's from Australia or New Zealand or Brazil, that lean beef ground meat that goes into the burger market, they blend that with their domestic stuff. So they do need to have that lean beef coming in so that they can make patties to the right fat and lean meat ratio. If they don't bring that meat in, then they're going to have a restriction in the amount of patties they can produce domestically at that right ratio. They've got to find it somewhere. And so Australia is perfectly positioned given our very competitive global beef pricing presently and the fact that we're one of the countries that have the lowest tariff applied presently.
That is Matt Dalgleish, a meat analyst with episode3.net, speaking to Warwick Long. So just recapping here, you've got Aussie cow prices sort of reaching record highs, and now it would seem Brazil's going to be locked out of that US market, a market that is desperate for lean beef and already paying record prices to get their hands on it. Strap in, cattle industry. I'll be talking more about this on Landline.
The WA fishing village with a jetty to nowhere.
Oh man, it's ridiculous. You can't leave it as it is. Either remove it or fix it.
That's Landline Sunday, 12:30 on ABC TV and iView.
The text number here at the Country Hour is 0487 99 1057. Got a text here that says, Donald Trump, 1 minute up, next minute down, unstable market outcomes. And I'm also getting messages from you, fantastic song suggestions on what is the horse's birthday. August 1 is the horse's birthday. It's also the official start of the tiger prawn season in Northern Australia, and you'll get to meet a fisho in just a moment. But at the moment, in terms of what song should we be playing this afternoon for the horse's birthday? Now, I've got a message here from Steve-O, and I'll admit I haven't come across this song before. Steve-O says, play Heavy Horses by Jethro Tull. It's a great homage to the old Shire horses hauling freight and how we may yet need them again, says Steve-O. I've gone and found that song, Steve-O. My only problem is it goes for 9 minutes. That's pretty much the whole Country Hour. I just don't think we've got time for Heavy Horses. We've got multiple votes coming in, though, for this classic by Slim Dusty. It's Leave Him in the Long Yard.
Leave him there and we will turn him out today.
Leave Him in the Long Yard by Slim Dusty. An overwhelming song suggestion by you this afternoon to help celebrate the horse's birthday. It is August 1, which means it's also the official start of the tiger prawn season in Northern Australia. The industry is hoping for some big catches this year and some better prices. Bill West has been skippering prawn trawlers for decades and says this year he'll be getting out of Darwin and heading west, heading straight into some of the fishing grounds of the Kimberley region. I caught up with Bill just before he sailed out, and he said the lead-up this year, as always, had been busy.
The same as pre any season. Every boat has been prepared because of the limited time of the seasons. We don't want breakdowns, we don't want lost time, so very much a case of getting a boat ready for sea and hopefully in a state that it's going to be able to fish for the 3 months. Between nets, boats, normal routine.
When you set sail out of Darwin, where to first?
For myself, I'm actually going back down into the Kimberley, so I'm going west. I'll be targeting banana prawns for the first couple of weeks, possibly longer if it is good. It's an area that I've got personal local knowledge of, I've spent a lot of time in, and some of that fishery is untapped until this point, hasn't been worked, so that's where I'll be starting.
And has that always been the play for you, Bill? Go west first?
No, it hasn't. I was in the NPF with my own boat 40-odd years ago. Went through all the buybacks and ended up in a situation that the only place I could operate was the Kimberley. So I spent time down there and ended up with a fair bit of local knowledge. Used to be 7 or 8 boats operating there all the time. It's got to the point now that I'll probably be the only boat there. So it's just a gamble. We'll see.
So what sort of season are you expecting then?
It's been the first half of the season very, very poor. Probably one of the hardest as far as owners and operators. We always go out with high expectations. That's why we go. Talk is that tiger prices are going to be a bit better this year as far as export tigers, large prawns. But we've also got constantly increasing overheads, fuel costs and things. So, yeah, like as always, we're gamblers. It's what we do.
Is it still roughly 52 vessels for the Northern Prawn Fishery?
I couldn't give an exact figure, but I believe that there are 52 licences. Active vessels might be, not 100%, might be 47, but there are at least two that aren't entering the fishery. There may be other dual licence boats that stay on the East Coast and don't come into it as well. So I think for the banana season, we started with 42 boats.
If all goes to plan for you, Bill West, when do you return home for that first offload of catch?
Oh, I'd like to think a week after we start, but reality is probably more like 3 weeks. It's normal situation. It's either empty fuel tanks or full freezer.
And do you gorge yourself on prawns yourself when you're out there?
No, I don't, but I do love seafood. So a big part of it, I've got two Indonesian crew, and a big part of our diet comes off the sorting tray. So,
do you have a special recipe to share?
I eat them, I don't cook them.
I hope it all goes really well for you. Thanks for your time on the Country Hour.
No worries at all. Thank you.
That is Bill West. He's been skippering prawn trawlers since prawns were invented. The tiger prawn season, it starts today, Friday, August the 1st. To everyone heading out and dropping nets, we hope the season treats you kindly.
Hi, it's Dwayne Klinkamer here on board the Austral Hunter, part of the Northern Prawn Fishery, and we're in the Mooring Basin, or better known as the Duck Pond in Darwin, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Now, I'll be chatting to Bushfires NT in about 10 minutes' time, mostly to talk about fire conditions in the Barkly. But if you've got a question that you want to put to Bushfires NT, send it through on that text number 0487 99 1057. Someone has sent me a picture of them enjoying a glass of rum this afternoon while listening to the Country Hour. Don't send that to me halfway during the show. That's putting me off, making me thirsty. It is a Friday, and it's 5 o'clock somewhere, and we're still getting some lovely song suggestions coming through in terms of tunes that we should be playing on the horse's birthday. Someone suggesting My Lovely, Lovely, Lovely Horse from the Father Ted album. Keep them coming. 0487 99 1057 is the text number. It's time to go to the newsroom. It's 1 o'clock on your ABC.
G'day, Rob Hall here from Airway Logistics at the Darwin Export Hub. We support industry here to export rock melons, watermelons, pumpkins and mango to the world straight out of Darwin. And you're listening to The Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. One of Australia's most well-known Wagyu operations is up for sale. It's up for sale, so if you like some beef and have always dreamt of running a large Wagyu herd, there is an opportunity. You'll be hearing from Peter Gilmore from Iron Gate Wagyu very soon on the Country Hour. And I will be speaking to Bushfires NT in a moment. If you've got a question for Bushfires NT, send it through on the text 0487 99 1057. I think we've still got time for another horsey song on the Country Hour today. August 1, it is the horse's birthday. Whoa, run away, horses.
We'll be riding on the horses, yeah, yeah. Whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Billy Lynch is there this afternoon. How are you, Billy?
Good, thanks, Matt.
Happy horse's birthday to you.
Yeah, likewise.
You got an old nag out the back, do you?
An old what?
An old nag.
What's a nag, sorry?
Horse. It's a horse.
Never heard of that.
True. Oh, well, there we go.
No.
Next time,
no, is the answer.
Next time you're driving along and see some old horse in the corner of a paddock, you can say, check out that old nag.
I think I will.
Now, before we get to the forecast for the weekend, let's talk about some of the rain that has fallen in the last 24 hours, including 56 millimetres at Point Stewart.
Yeah, I'd love to. So this was that southeasterly surge that collided with the humidity overnight. So, yeah, top of the list, Point Stewart, 56, which is a record for that location for the month of August, because, you know, it doesn't normally rain in August.
Mm.
The other good one was Cullen River with 20 millimetres. Uralba Ridge 6, Tortilla Flats 2.5. Yeah, sort of a scattering across the top end between Darwin and Catherine of sort of 1 to 3 millimetres.
Right. Is there any more to come?
It's all gone.
Done and dusted.
Yeah, it's just a few little showers still on the Tiwis, but the southeasterlies are sort of yet to push through there, but basically it's all gone, and finally that quite prolonged period of humidity has come to an end.
Hooray. And in the end for the Barkly, like I see Tennant Creek Airport jagged 1 millimetre, given there's not lots of official rain gauges out in the Barkly, but do you feel like the region might have got a few sprinkles in spots?
Yeah, I think certainly earlier in the week we were hoping for a little bit more through the Barkly. But yeah, even looking at some of the rain gauges just on the Queensland side of the border, it only seems to be sort of 1 to 2 mils. So
yeah,
that's probably representative of what was out there yesterday.
Okay. So tell us more about the weekend.
Yeah, look, basically big high in the Bight. So we got the cooler, drier, southeasterly winds. Temperatures will be below average, both, you know, around Alice Springs and also up in the top end, and particularly in the top end, those overnight minimum temperatures getting pretty cool. And obviously the coastal waters, quite windy. We've got marine wind warnings for much of our coastal waters this weekend too.
For a big chunk of the coast. How long are you expecting that to last for, Billy?
Well, yeah, so the warnings are current today. The strength of that surge will strengthen tomorrow. So tomorrow will be the peak of the winds, gradually easing from Sunday. So Sunday's probably the last day that we would need some coastal wind warnings.
Okay, and it is a long weekend. I forgot that for a moment. The Hearts Range picnic races are on. They're camp drafting there today. What's the weather likely to be along that stretch of the Plenty?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's going to be sunny, a little bit breezy, I guess, with those east-southeasterlies, but the main thing is going to be cool, so the temperatures will be around about 20 during the day and probably getting close to zero, maybe a little bit below overnight.
Okay, no worries. Anything else we should be aware of before you go?
No, yes, it's a really simple story for the next 3 days.
The dry season has resumed. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Matt.
That's Billy Lynch there at the Weather Bureau. And just repeating, there is that strong wind warning in place this afternoon for the Beagle Bonaparte Coast, the Arafura Coast, the Gove Peninsula Coast, and the Roper Groote Coast. I'll be speaking to Bushfires NT next.
Get set for spring with ABC Organic Gardener. There's tips for veggie success, attracting more butterflies, growing oats, and more. Organic Gardener Magazine, available from newsagents and abcmagazines.com.au.
Bushfires NT has today declared a fire danger period for the Barkly Fire Management Zone. We're joined this afternoon by Incident Controller David Bredmore. How are you, David?
Good afternoon, Matt. How are you?
I am well. Tell us more about this declaration and what it means.
Oh, well, as we've done, as we've moved down through the territory, we're moving into more fire danger periods and more extreme weather. So we've needed to now include the Barkly region into the fire danger period. So that's Carpentaria East, Barkly North, Barkly South weather forecast districts, including Barralula, Elliot and Tennant Creek emergency response areas.
And what does it mean?
So it means that essentially it doesn't change things greatly, other than you will require a permit in order to do any fuel reduction burns or burning. It means that when you're out camping, etc., we want you to make sure you're extinguishing your fire before you leave. Those types of precautions. But most importantly for those people out in the pastoral country is to apply for a permit when they're doing their burning. And that provides us an opportunity to have a very good situational awareness of fire in our landscape, because, as you know, we currently do have fire burning in the landscape in the Barkly.
Well, there's been a sizeable fire this week to the east of Tennant Creek and south of the Barkley Highway. What's the latest on that blaze?
Okay, so that fire started on the 9th of July and was contained, and we had some fire weather, as you were aware, on Friday the 25th of July, and under extreme conditions, that fire took a significant run. In fact, it moved 25 kilometres in a day. It's currently sitting at 2,720 square kilometres with a perimeter of about 700 kilometres. However, what I'm pleased to say is that we are very close to being able to say we have control over that fire, and it is being contained. So we've got no active fire edge at the moment. Our fire behaviour is low. The forward rate of spread has been stopped, and our containment lines are holding. Having said that, however, we're just about to go into a weekend where the fire danger period is going to sit in high for nearly 56 hours. So, you know, this is why it's important that we've got to declare these fire danger periods throughout the territory as the risk increases.
Okay, I've got here 27,000 hectares lost in that blaze. Sound about right?
That's, no, 271,000 hectares.
Whee, it's a big fire. I got a question from our audience here for you, David. It says, did the Bushfires NT have a review after the last big Barkley fire, and what were the findings and the outcomes of it?
There was a review. Those findings have not been released yet, so I'm not able to provide any details on that, but I do understand that review was done. And, you know, it's got to, you know, in relation to that question, this fire has been contained and controlled much quicker than the previous one, but we've got, you know, quite difficult conditions that are largely being led by climate at the moment in throughout the country.
Do you know when that review is being made public? Because those massive fires were, what, back in 2023?
2023, that's correct. No, I don't have any information available to you from my desk in the Incident Control Centre, Matt, sorry.
No. David, on another fire, there's been one at Coolpinia Cattle Station. Aircraft have been involved. What's the latest on that?
Well, that one is a contained. The Gurin fire. Sorry, yes, that was last evening. We put some aircraft over the top of that to provide some additional aerial information, but it was contained quite quickly, and it's been patrolled today. We will be keeping an eye on it as we head into this weekend, where we're going to see some higher fire danger periods occurring.
Right. So is it at Coolpinia or the rural suburb of Girraween?
It's in Girraween Road.
Ah, rightio.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Anything else this afternoon that you'd like our audience to be aware of, David?
No, I think we just need to keep an eye on the fact that we are heading into a weekend of high fire danger, and we would like people to be aware of that up here in the Darwin-Adelaide River area.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Matt.
And that is David Bredmore, who's the incident controller at Bushfires NT. It's 22 past one. If you've ever dreamt about owning a pretty large herd of Wagyu cattle, I've got an opportunity for you next.
I'm Lockie Bear. I'm from Monogeny Station in the Northern Territory. And you're listening to the ABC Country Hour.
Yeah, one of Australia's best-known Wagyu beef properties is on the market. Peter Gilmore is hanging up the hat after more than two decades of building a very impressive herd of full-blood Wagyu. So this operation, it's located in the south of WA. Peter told Amelia Searson how his America's Cup sailing career was what led him to Wagyu beef in the first place.
I'd worked with the Japanese with their America's Cup team, and we had first-hand experience of Wagyu beef, and suddenly understood, gee, this is an amazing eating quality beef. And so we bought the sort of offspring of, say, first, second or third sort of offspring, bought 40 Wagyu herd, slowly decreased our composite herd and used both natural mating and then after that a lot of embryo transfer work to build our own herd numbers and to keep them 100% full blood, all parent verified back to their Japanese parentage. And that has allowed us now to sort of build forward to where we've got around 1,400 breeder animals, about 2,700 total animals in the production system, and provide beef through to our Safari Wagyu program, which has been going quite successfully. So over that journey, we've gone from being a cow-calf producer to a feeder producer to our own fed finished animals and our own box beef, so essentially being fully integrated or vertically integrated.
You mentioned a little bit there, Peter, you weren't always in Wagyu and you had a very successful career in quite a different industry with sailing. What got you into sailing?
It just so happened that where I grew up was nearby a yacht club, and eventually I guess the people of my generation would probably remember the America's Cup coming to Fremantle, and just happened to be in a good sailor in the right city at the right time. And so that started a tremendous sailing career for me. The thing that really instilled in me was the importance of analysing the data, and that's something that we've been able to bring to this Wagyu business, is the importance of key attributes of farming sort of high-end beef and how to sort of maximise your outputs, minimise your shortcomings and so forth. And it's really been quite profound, the ability to analyse above and beyond what a normal cow-calf producer would be doing.
You don't need to ask around for long in the Wagyu industry before you hear a lot of praise come your way as one of the pioneers of Wagyu. What have some of the highlights for you been over the past two decades, Peter?
Here in Albany and in Western Australia, the main Wagyu industry is essentially East Coast production. There are very few producers on the West Coast, but you know, we've always seen it as a great opportunity and growing it from there. And it's, we realised to be able to sort of stand out, we really needed to make sure that we were collecting the data and analysing our herd to the best of our ability to be able to sell, say, bulls, for example, or heifers or our meat produce. We really needed to be producing top quality production, and that's been one of our sort of focuses of the business.
Looking into your crystal ball for a second, Peter, where do you think Australia's Wagyu industry is heading?
The Wagyu industry in Australia is in a very unique position. Outside of Japan, it is the world's biggest production herd. Our cost of production from the many tours that I've done through Japan is about 30% of a fed finished animal. So over the hook, and for the meat that we sell, you know, our cost base is a lot lower. We are starting to see with this genomic era, which started in about 2018, a sort of a real J-curve uplift in being able to select super high quality animals. And then of course having demand from export customers. And the big thing that we feel is extraordinary amounts of demand, like a customer in China, for example, says, we need triple the volume. Can you deliver triple the volume? And we can't just overnight double or triple our numbers. It's a slow game. I think the other attribute that Australia has is our marble score system of 0 to 9 and then 9+, whereas the US system is choice, select and prime. If we're using the Meat Image Japan camera, and that can develop marble scores all the way up to 18. The interesting thing is all of that connected together is, call it MLA, Osmeat systems, together with the quality and the growth of the herd in Australia, really provides a tailwind for the industry. And look, I think we're going into one of those areas with the tariff uncertainty, with the US herd being sort of in a rebuild phase, where I think Australian beef is, whether it's Wagyu or standard beef production, is going to be a very in-demand product in the coming years.
So, Peter, the big question on everyone's minds, what's next for you?
We certainly love the industry, and so if there's something to do, I mean, I always saw the years that I spent sailing that I could put my knowledge there to good use. I did coach for several years, but I think the knowledge base that we've developed in Wagyu industry is something that I certainly would love to put to good use. So look, something will pop up, may well be within the same business or it may be with somebody else, but I'll wait and see what happens.
That's Irongate Wagyu Managing Director Peter Gilmore. He's put the business up for sale after more than two decades in that industry. And that wraps up this afternoon's Country Hour. Big thanks to those who have texted in their song suggestions. Fantastic song suggestions to help celebrate the horse's birthday. Including Mark, hoping to hear a little bit of Tennessee Stirred by Doc Watson. Great suggestion.
Stirrup to stirrup and side by side, we crossed the mountains and the valleys wide. We came to Big Muddy, then we forded the flood on the Tennessee Mare and the Tennessee Stud. I put a little baby on the cabin floor, a little horse coat playing around the door. I love that girl with the golden hair, and the Tennessee Stud loves the Tennessee Mare.
It's a public holiday on Monday, but the Country Hour will be on your radio. So I'll catch you at 12:30 then. Keep it rural.
He had the nerve and he had the blood, and there never was a horse like the Tennessee Stud.